What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron, go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, get every episode for free, right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. All right, I have to do a quick shift here. I know I said I was going to talk about the poll denialism, and I will, I promise. But right now, there's a hearing, testimony being provided by retired generals on the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Congressman Brad Sherman, Democrat from, I believe, California, he's blaming Donald Trump. So this is happening live.
Was there a way for us to go all around Afghanistan and demand the return of our equipment? This is assuming, I realize that at the time we hoped that the Afghan armed forces would use that to resist the Taliban. But if we had realized that they were going to cave immediately, could we have taken that equipment away from all these Afghans with no casualties?
No, of course not.
So we would have incurred very substantial casualties if we had done what so many on the other side of the aisle have suggested, and that somehow get back our equipment. Now, how does our withdrawal from Afghanistan compare to our withdrawal from... I have another question.
Yeah, don't ask that one.
Biden came in January 2021. Was there a comprehensive plan at that time to both withdraw absolutely every one of our servicemen, because that was the promise Trump had made to the American people, while withdrawing in an organized way with no American casualties? Was there a complete plan ready to go at that time?
So, 2 points, if I go back to the equipment just very quickly. As I recall, and I think it's laid out in the SIGAR's report, the special IG for Afghanistan, it's about 80-some-odd billion General. Dollars worth of military aid total. That's everything from food and building barracks and uniforms and boots to include equipment. Over 20 years,
right.
And then he cites, I think it's $7.2 billion of military equipment, U.S.-manufactured military equipment, that is with the Afghan security forces. That's Afghan-owned equipment, not American equipment. Every piece of American equipment that the American military owned came out with us with Scott Miller, or he destroyed it on site. And that's a fact. So the idea that the American...
Hang on a second. So... all of that equipment was the Afghani equipment that they turned over. So you just blew up the Democrat talking point on that one, just to be clear. Okay, good.
The George W. Bush Institute of February 2024, the captured state on human cost and on corruption.
Joe Wilson.
Objection so ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And indeed, generals, we appreciate your service. But we just have to learn from what's occurred, the appeasement in Afghanistan. The Biden decision to appease is the worst foreign policy, national security decision, I believe, in the history of the United States. It led directly to the encouragement of dictators who are ruling by gun to invade the democracies of rule of law. We saw that on February 22, 2022, when war...
This is Congressman Joe Wilson from South Carolina's upstate.
On October 7, 2023, when the regime in Tehran, through their puppets of Hamas, invaded Israel. We see it today as the world's largest military buildup is being conducted by the Chinese Communist Party to threaten Taiwan. The global war on terrorism continues, and indeed with open borders, the American families have never been at greater risk of attack. And I especially appreciate the military families who are here today. As a 31-year veteran of the 118th Infantry Brigade, I visited 4 times with our personnel, with the Adjutant General Bob Livingston, our troops serving in Afghanistan, and I saw them serve with their Afghan brothers, just as you did. And due to encouragement by my wife, I'm particularly grateful my oldest son, Alan, received a CAB in Iraq, my second son, a doctor at Baghdad International Airport, my third served at the southern border and also served in Egypt, and my youngest son served under your command a year in Afghanistan. And to me, the Biden decision that led to the 13 deaths of the persons at Abbey Gate, the service members, is just inexcusable. And I actually felt assured, generals, knowing that your competence and capability, particularly a Citadel graduate, I am very concerned that you were blamed on August the 26th, 2021, by Mr. Biden. He specifically said that the 13 murdered, the withdrawal of forces was a decision as determined by the military, and he said he had letters that indicated that you had said that there should be an immediate appeasement. I sent a letter that day to the president asking for copies of the letters, and every couple of months I'll send another request. It has not been provided, and so there are no letters. And it's the responsibility of the President of the United States, his decision that resulted in what occurred of putting American families at risk. With that, and indeed the Doha Agreement, each of you, was there a violation? It was conditions-based. And weren't were there violations by the Taliban of the agreement?
I'll let John McKenzie give the specifics, but yes, the Taliban violated every condition of the agreement except lethal attacks on U.S. forces from the time they signed the agreement all the way to the end.
Do you remember why that's important? Does anybody remember why that's important? Right. Because it means that Joe Biden had the ability to not do the withdrawal on the timetable that was laid out in the Doha agreement because the Taliban had violated it. So what you just heard that other congressman, I forget who it was, Bradley or whatever, you heard him saying that you had to, they had to do this because Trump did it all. He wrote the contract. He signed the deal and you had no choice but to do it. And oh, actually you did. We're still fighting over this. It's been 4 years. We're still fighting over the same stupid talking points. It's just really frustrating. So kudos to Joe Wilson there. He's still going, actually. Hang on a second. Let's see what he's...
So my position on Bagram was, it linked to my recommendation, my position then and now, that we should have held at 2,500. At 2,500 U.S. forces, if you also assume that will allow the Afghans to stay in the fight, you can maintain a viable base at Bagram.
General
Bagram, Kenneth McKenzie, protecting American families. And hey, as we conclude, we still have a president making bad decisions, and that is that we had 7 weeks ago, three young Americans were killed, Army reservists from Georgia. And this was a decision of the President, Mr. Biden, who did not follow through on trying to stop these attacks on our troops by the puppets of Iran. And we've lost three service members, over 40 injured. And the President needs to take this seriously. We're in a conflict for existential of our country. Thank you.
All right, that's Congressman Joe Wilson from the upstate of South Carolina. This is a hearing. It's got McKenzie and Milley there talking about the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. But you heard also McKenzie talking about the Bagram air base. He's like, I would not have left it as it was left. So what? Like, all of the spin in the world, right, is not going to make this look better for Democrats. Much like the polling. And even though they are denying what they are seeing, that doesn't make it true. See how I brought it all back together? Like, do not attempt this kind of a segue on your own, people. I am a trained professional. I do have some messages. Let me go ahead and knock these out real quick. Stan. Stan says, Pete, in light of the fact that somebody was just detained trying to cross our border, I don't know if they were in possession of bomb-making materials, but he said he wanted to make a bomb and was going to go to New York City and build and detonate it. Right. That is a true story that did occur. Why would Israel or anybody for that matter take advice about its security from anyone associated with an administration that cannot secure its own border? Very good question. John says, I learned something new every day from your show, Pete. I did not realize Senator Schumer's name was pronounced Chuck U. Schumer. All these years I've been mispronouncing it. I thought it was pronounced Schmuck Schumer. Oh, that's a good one. I've never heard that pronunciation before. I think it depends on which region you come from, which dialect you've got. Either one's correct. Potato, potato, you know? Actually, I don't ever hear anybody say potato. Do you hear anybody use the word potato? No. Not even tomato anymore. Nobody says tomato except Annie about how the sun will come out tomato, but that's it. Nobody else says tomato. Weird. Okay, so let me get to Nate Silver. Nate Silver, he was the guy who originally founded, if I recall correctly, 538.com. 538.com was like a polling outfit, right? And it's like your 435 members of Congress, plus your 100 senators, plus your, what is it? President, vice president, and then who is the third? I forget. Or maybe it wasn't even based on that at all. Either way, he did statistical analysis. And I think he came out of the sports world, and then he started doing politics. He became very big. I think he was hooked up with the New York Times. And then eventually he went off on his own. He abandoned the 538 thing. New York Times kept that, and they hired some other guy named Nate. Nate something or other. I forget his last name, but he still does that. But Nate Silver does his own deal. I think I'm not confusing the two Nates. But anyway, when Nate Silver says some of this statistical analysis stuff, people tend to listen. He's like the E.F. Hutton of polling. And so he comes to the defense of a fella named John Byrne Murdoch, who is with the Financial Times, who did a Twitter thread showing substantial losses for Democrats among non-white voters, which he termed a racial realignment. And when he plots this stuff out, you can see you've got two lines, one blue for Democrats, one red for Republicans, and there's about a 25-point spread, or 50-point spread, I should say, between Democrats at the top of the chart and Republicans at the bottom. And it's a line graph, and so it's going from left to right, and the line's going, you know, like two little snakes going. They're racing each other because the bottom is, you know, the 72 election, 76, 80, 84, 88. And at 2016, the Republican line starts shooting up, and the Democrat line starts plunging down, and they're almost about to cross at 50%. And you know what that is? That's non-white voters. And if you don't think Democrats are terrified of this number, you are kidding yourself. This is existential to them. All right, well, just as I predicted, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in North Carolina. The wait is over. Now you can legally bet on all of your favorite sports anytime, anywhere in the state with DraftKings, an official sports betting partner of NASCAR. DraftKings has tons of the best features like parlays for multiple games, player props that focus on individual players and their performance within a specific game, social betting groups where you can share your bets with your friends in real time, and just in time for college basketball conference tournaments now underway. And as always, fast and easy payouts, and I have a special promo for you. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use the code word Pete, and bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, promo code Pete. The crown is yours, but this is a limited time offer. Gambling problem? Call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Oh, and deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms are at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. And NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and is used under license. The Nate Silver write-up on Democrats' poll denialism is damning for Democrats. David Strom writing about it at hotair.com. He says Democrats are furious with him over this. Both anecdotal and objective evidence show there has been a pretty dramatic shift in attitudes among minority voters, most especially among Hispanic and Black voters. For generations, these voters have reflexively voted for Democrats to the point that the correlation between their ideological commitments and their voting patterns hardly matched. Right? What they believed did not align with the party platforms. Cultural affiliation, not ideological consistency, kept these voters in the Democrat column, and it seemed nothing could shake that connection. This was so evident in North Carolina, during one of the many, many, many lawsuits that Democrats filed over the many, many redistricting maps that were drawn over the course of the last, now, 14 years, right? The original maps that were drawn in 2010 when the Republicans took control in, 2011 with the census data, and they did the redistricting in 2011 for the first time in over a century. They got to control the process that Democrats had had a monopoly on. And they used the rules that Democrats had been using. And Democrats sued them over it. And over the next decade and a half, Democrats and progressive leftist organizations, Mark Elias, the super lawyer, right, Hillary Clinton's cutout guy, they've been suing North Carolina over and over and over again, creating just this maze of law that you can't even really follow. You can't create maps based on any kind of discernible standards based on some of these court rulings, which, yes, some have been overturned. They go to the Supreme Court. And anyway, one of the cases that went to the Supreme Court that made all the headlines because they were like, oh, targeted precision went after African-American voters, that whole thing. Supreme Court Justice Alito pointed out that they're using partisan identification. They're not using race. But because partisan identification and race are so closely connected that you're accusing them of the one thing based on the results when there's no evidence of that intent. And it's a very dangerous thing to do. But the lefties on the Supreme Court didn't care. They did it anyway. And that became the headline, targeted with precision, you know, racial minorities and all this, when in fact Republicans had targeted Democrat clusters. Like this idea that black voters are registered Democrats 90%+ is known in political science circles, right? Everybody knows this. You're in politics, people know this. And what has been happening is the erosion of that support. And this is an existential threat to the Democrat Party. I have been saying this for, gosh, now 15 years. If black voters voted like any other racial group, Democrats would no longer win really anything. Like at a national level, they would not win anything. They could not win the presidency, right? If you start seeing this kind of erosion occurring in the different demographic groups, this is a bloodbath. Oh, sorry. Sorry. Didn't mean to say that. Gosh. Nothing except the rapid left-wing shift of the Democrats and the utter failure of Joe Biden's presidency, and of course Donald Trump's idiosyncratic political style, runs counter to the old Republican way of behaving. Since 2016, David Strom has joked that Donald Trump is a white rapper. Think about that. Donald Trump is a white rapper. In fact, I remember hearing, I don't know if this is still true, but in 2016, that he was the most mentioned name or something, you know, like in, or maybe like businessman's name in rap songs. And I don't know, David Strom says maybe that finally seems to have been noticed among black voters. The problems are particularly bad for Democrats among working class voters of color and younger ones. A lot of black, Hispanic, and Asian American voters have long identified as moderate, even conservative, not liberal. But the theory here is that Democrats' tilt towards more liberal policies is finally starting to catch up with them. David Strom would say they're not liberal policies, they're progressive policies, right? Also, the younger kids don't have a memory of the civil rights era. And so those connections no longer have the kind of weight that they once did. So this guy at the Financial Times, he writes this thread on Twitter. It triggers all sorts of responses, which is part of a pattern of poll denialism by Democrats, which is, by the way, crept its way even into the White House. Democrats fooled themselves into believing their own propaganda about Trump's supposed racism, but Trump has spent decades doing business with and socializing with blacks and Hispanics, and he doesn't appear to pander to them. So whatever else you could say about Trump what you see is what you get, and that is not the feeling that most black people get with Democrats anymore, right? Trump is more relatable than some of the more progressive moonbat members in the Democrat coalition. The shift is in a lot of ways interesting because the Democrats are responding to this evidence as if it doesn't exist, right? It's like, so Nate Silver is getting beaten up online because he agrees with this other guy, Bern Murdoch. And Silver is trying to point this out to Democrats, saying that, you guys, this is a blind spot for you. But Democrats cannot wrap their heads around the fact that the party aligned itself with overeducated white liberals who are obsessed with virtue signaling more than being, well, basically decent people, right? So members of the working class get alienated by that kind of behavior, by those kinds of people. It's not a natural coalition. The awfuls and the working class. It's not. The awfuls are the affluent, white, female liberals. The awfuls, right? Not a natural coalition. I've been calling them the Elysium Party for years. Because from the movie Elysium, where you've got, you know, the working class down on the planet, and then all the wealthy elites all up on the spaceship flying around, sucking up all of the resources and stuff. Like, that's your coalition. That's not sustainable. They say the driving force in the Democrat coalition is allegiance to a radical cultural ideology, which is utterly alien to anybody who has not marinated in elite educational circles. He then goes on to point out a place in Texas called Starr County, S-T-A-R-R. It's where all the famous people live. I'm kidding. It's Starr County. It's 98% Hispanic. That is the most of any county in America outside of Puerto Rico. And that makes it a really, really interesting data point.
All right. Do the current world events have you wondering whether we are teetering on the edge of catastrophe? Are you concerned it's going to reach our shores? Okay. So what are you doing about your concerns? Let me help. Carolina Readiness Supply. At CarolinaReadiness.com, whether you're looking to expand your emergency preparedness supplies or you have no idea where to even begin, Carolina Readiness Supply can help you. Food, water purifiers, tools, first aid kits, instructional materials, camping and hiking supplies even, because being prepared is just smart. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies and educational materials that you'll need for any kind of emergency. In Waynesville and always at CarolinaReadiness.com, veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out?
Starr County, 98% Hispanic. The most Hispanic county in America outside of Puerto Rico. Starr County is also quite poor. So it's a good place to look for patterns among working class Hispanics. And what's happening there should be very, very frightening to Democrats. Since 2016, the number of votes in Starr County has gone from roughly an 8,000 vote spread in favor of Democrats to now tied. Just in 8 years. How does that happen? Biden received as many votes in Starr County as Hillary Clinton did in 2016, or the same amount as Barack Obama did, 2008, and in 2012. But Trump surged. He went from 2,200 votes to 8,200 votes, basically quadrupling his vote count in Starr County. Nate Silver says, I have rarely seen anything like this, especially in the contemporary American political landscape where partisan preferences tend to be relatively stable. Turnout was much higher in Starr County in 2020, but those new voters came out overwhelmingly for Trump, contradicting the longstanding belief that Democrats benefit from higher turnout among minority groups. The shift of the Hispanic vote in South Texas has undermined Democrats' dreams of turning Texas blue, or at least purple, offsetting gains that Democrats have made in the Houston, Dallas, and Austin metro areas. A host of other analysts as well have noticed the same trend. You remember the guy named Rui Tejera?
spelled T-E-I-X-E-I-R-A. This was the guy who gave us the phrase, demographics is destiny. That was him. He was saying that at the time, in the 2000s, early 2000s, he was saying that as white people get older and die off, Republicans will also get older and die off, because those tend to be Republicans. And so when, as America becomes quote-unquote browner, then it will be more Democrat. Demographics is destiny. And when conservatives, Republicans, and white people started hearing this, and they were like, oh, that kind of sounds like, I don't know, like kind of like replacement theory kind of strategy or something. And then they saw, oh, you want to open up the borders and bring in millions of people that would also fit the description of the people you believe are going to be voting you into power. Well, this kind of that really does appear to be evidence of like some sort of a replacement strategy. And then, of course, the media and the left, but I repeat myself, they responded with, oh, my gosh, you said replacement theory. Like, but that's what you guys were saying. Like, oh, but you're saying it, it's racist. No, this was the strategy. This was the point, right? Now, guys like Rui Teixeira, they're like, yeah, remember that whole thing when I said demographics is destiny? See, I didn't count on you guys alienating your base. I didn't expect you guys to go full moonbat left wing crazy, you know? But that, look, I don't know. I'm not going to predict for you any of the elections. I don't do it. I'm not good at it. But also, there is the shakeup that is occurring, the realignment that is occurring. I've been saying this for years. There is a political realignment occurring right now. We don't know what this is going to look like when it all sort of, you know, settles, it shakes out and it settles down, and we have some coalitions that have now kind of, you know, bound together for electoral successes, and they're willing to work with each other, at least in the short term. We don't know what that's going to look like yet. But generally speaking, when a member of a coalition feels like they're not getting any satisfaction from the powers that be that are running it, they will go find somewhere else that will get them some of what they're asking for. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.